All right, we're diving into a case today that really kind of throws a wrench into the gears of free speech on campus.
Yeah.
Oyama v. University of Hawaii. Hmm. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
We're talking about that intersection
yeah.
of First Amendment rights and a university's duty
right.
to ensure its graduates, especially ones going into professions like teaching, meet certain ethical and professional standards.
Right.
So how do we balance those things?
Yeah, this is particularly interesting because it's not the typical like
yeah.
student protest scenario.
Right.
This is about some pretty deeply concerning views
right.
expressed by a student teacher.
Yeah.
And it raises questions about where the line is between personal beliefs
yeah.
and professional suitability.
Exactly. We're talking about Mark Oyama.
Right.
On track to become a certified teacher at the University of Hawaii.
Yep.
But some of the things he said during his coursework and in a middle school placement
yeah.
raised some serious red flags.
One of the most alarming aspects of this case
yeah.
is what he was actually saying.
Yeah.
He argued for the legality
okay.
of what he called consensual online child predation.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty
disturbing stuff coming from someone who wants to work with kids.
Absolutely, and it didn't stop there.
Okay.
He also dismissed disabilities as being made up.
Oh, wow.
And labeled special education students as fakers.
Oh, my goodness.
So great.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
Extreme stuff.
And these weren't just like isolated incidents, right?
Yep, not at all.
There were concerns about his behavior at the middle school, too.
During a middle school placement.
Yeah.
He got poor evaluations from his supervisors.
So the university is looking at this... Mm. This pattern of statements and behavior,
mm-hmm.
they decided to deny his student teaching application.
Yeah.
Basically blocking him
right.
from becoming a certified teacher.
Yeah, they said his views were basically incompatible
right.
with being a teacher.
With the standards expected of educators.
Exactly.
And this is where the legal battle begins.
This is where it gets interesting.
Oyama sues the university.
Yep.
Claims they violated his First Amendment rights.
It's his free speech rights.
To free speech by punishing him for his opinions.
Right.
He also argued he was denied due process,
mm-hmm.
meaning he wasn't given a fair shake.
Right, a fair chance to respond.
To respond to the concerns about him being a teacher.
Exactly.
So we got a clash of rights here.
Classic clash of rights.
Oyama claiming freedom of speech was violated.
Right.
And the university arguing they have a responsibility to uphold these ethical and professional standards.
Particularly in their teacher training program.
So how did the courts handle this?
Well, he lost in the district court.
Right.
Then he appealed to the Ninth Circuit, and he lost there too.
Quiet.
But the significant thing about the Ninth Circuit ruling
okay.
is they created a new three-part test.
Oh, interesting.
For universities to balance free speech rights with professional standards in these types of programs.
So this wasn't just about Oyama.
No, they saw an opportunity here
right.
to set a precedent
right.
for universities all across the country.
Oh, wow. So break it down for us.
Okay. So the first part of the test
yeah.
focuses on ensuring that any restrictions on student speech are directly tied to some external standard.
Okay.
Like it can't just be the university's internal policies or opinions.
So it's got to be something concrete.
It's got to be something concrete.
Like a what?
Like state laws,
okay.
accreditation requirements,
okay.
or widely accepted ethical codes within the profession.
So did the university meet that first part of the test in Oyama's case?
They did, actually.
Okay.
They were able to argue that his statements about child predation
uh-huh.
and his views on disabilities
right.
violated Hawaii's teacher ethics code
okay.
and federal disability laws.
Interesting.
So they had concrete legal and ethical grounds.
So it wasn't just them expressing disapproval.
Mm-hmm.
They had something real to back it up.
Hmm. Exactly. They had to show they weren't just shutting down opinions they didn't like.
Right.
They had a genuine connection
right.
to establish standards.
Okay, so that's one.
That's one.
Down, what's the second part?
The second part is all about what they call narrow tailoring.
Okay.
Any action against a student, like denying them certification,
right.
has to be directly related to speech or behavior that affects their professional competence.
So you can't punish someone
right.
for just expressing unpopular opinions.
Exactly. It has to be something that really raises concerns
right.
about their ability to do the job.
And in Oyama's case, it does seem like his statements...
Yeah.
directly relate to his potential ability to teach.
Absolutely. The court agreed with the university.
Okay.
They said Oyama's comments about minors and disabilities
Yeah.
directly impacted his potential fitness to be a teacher.
Because those weren't just abstract opinions.
Right. They went to the
I
core.
went to the core of what it means to be a teacher to
Exactly.
protect kids.
Right. So two down.
Two down, one to go.
One to go. The third one focuses on ensuring the university used reasonable judgment
Okay.
in their decision-making process.
So they can't just base it on their personal opinions, biases, political, whatever.
Pressures.
They got to show their assessment was grounded in like academic.
And professional expertise.
Okay. So it can't be arbitrary or
Nah.
based on someone's personal dislike.
Exactly. It has to be a reasoned professional evaluation.
Did the court find that the University of Hawaii did act reasonably?
They did.
Okay.
The court deferred to the university's judgment.
Interesting.
They recognized that they'd considered his statements and behavior
Yeah.
in light of their expertise in teacher training.
Right, and their responsibility to protect the well-being of the students.
Precisely.
This does raise an interesting question, though.
Yeah.
Doesn't this give universities a lot of power?
That's a great question, and that's something we'll explore a little bit later.
Right.
But for now, let's think about how this might impact other professions beyond teaching.
Right,
Like,
yeah.
what about a med student advocating for non-consensual treatment?
Right, or a law student
Yeah.
endorsing unethical legal tactics.
Exactly.
It's not just about teachers.
No, this has implications
Right.
throughout higher ed.
For all sorts of professional training programs, the
Absolutely.
Oyama case opens up a whole can of
It
worms
really
about
does.
how far universities can go,
And regulating speech.
especially in fields where students are being trained to uphold
Right.
specific ethical and professional standards.
Absolutely.
Feels like we're walking a tightrope here.
Yeah.
On one hand, we want to make sure professionals entering fields like medicine, law, social work
Right.
are ethically sound, won't pose a danger to the public.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
Yeah.
we don't want universities becoming thought police,
Right.
stifling dissenting opinions, enforcing a narrow range of acceptable viewpoints.
Yeah, it's a classic dilemma.
It is.
How do we balance professional standards with academic freedom and open inquiry?
Exactly.
And Oyama, it provides some guidance,
Yeah.
but not easy answers.
Yeah.
It really highlights relying on those external standards,
Yeah.
but who defines them?
Right.
How do we prevent them from being used to silence unpopular or unconventional perspectives?
What if someone has genuine ethical concerns
Right.
about certain medical practices,
Yeah.
but those views are considered unprofessional by the medical establishment?
Right.
Would they be barred from becoming a doctor
It's a really good question.
just for questioning the status quo?
It's a legitimate concern.
It is.
You
Ooh.
know, Oyama creates this potential chilling effect
Yeah?
where students might self-censor,
Hey, absolutely.
afraid to voice dissenting opinions,
Yeah.
even if those opinions are ethically sound
Right.
or raising important questions about their field.
It's a paradox, almost.
Yeah.
We want professionals who can think critically,
Right.
challenge assumptions, but then we might punish them for doing that. So
Exactly.
how do we even navigate that?
That's where the safeguards come in.
Okay.
We need clear guidelines that distinguish between legitimate threats to professional competence
Yeah.
and just expressing different viewpoints.
Right. So it can't just be
Yeah.
someone in authority feels uncomfortable. It's got
Exact.
to be a demonstrable connection
Right.
to the student's ability to do the job ethically and competently. I
Exactly.
think about Galileo
Oh, yeah.
being told he couldn't be an astronomer
Right.
because his heliocentric views
Right.
were unprofessional back then.
Unprofessional, yeah.
How many brilliant minds have been silenced
That's a good question.
just because their ideas challenge the prevailing dogma?
It's a sobering thought,
It is.
and it underscores the need for a system that allows for debate,
Yeah.
intellectual exploration,
Even within professional training.
even within those programs, yeah.
Well, how do we find that balance? So
Yeah.
how do we uphold professional standard
Yeah.
without creating this stifling environment?
I think one crucial step is transparency
Okay.
and accountability.
Okay.
Universities need to clearly articulate the standards they're using,
Right.
make those standards public.
Publicly accessible.
Yeah, no more vague language or ambiguous policies.
Right. So everyone's on the same page from day one.
Exact.
Students
So,
know what's expected.
yeah.
No room for misinterpretation or selective enforcement.
Right, and those standards shouldn't be static either.
Oh.
They need to be reviewed
Oh, interesting.
and updated
Okay.
to reflect evolving ethical and professional norms.
Because what was acceptable a few decades ago
right.
might be totally out of line today.
Exactly. Think about how much our understanding of mental health
right.
and disability has evolved.
Has evolved, yeah.
Statements that were maybe harmless or scientifically valid in the past.
Yeah.
Now we know are harmful and discriminatory.
Totally.
So these standards need to be living documents.
Living documents.
That evolve as our understanding evolves.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
So transparency, regular review of those standards, yeah. that's key. Yeah. What else?
Well, they need to establish clear
yeah.
and impartial procedures for evaluating student speech and behavior.
Okay.
And that starts with defining what a legitimate threat is
okay.
to professional competence.
What crosses the line?
Yeah. What are those specific actions or statements?
Okay.
And those criteria should be developed
oh.
in consultation with experts in the field.
Right.
Ethicists, legal scholars.
So it's not just one person making that judgment?
No, it should be a collaborative process.
Okay.
Multiple perspectives.
And the decision-making itself should involve multiple people.
Exactly.
Checks and balances.
Checks and balances, yeah.
So you don't have one person with too much power.
Exactly.
Ideally, you'd have a diverse panel.
Right.
Faculty, professionals from the field,
mm-hmm.
even student representatives
yeah.
reviewing these cases.
Exactly.
Where a student's fitness is in question.
That sounds like a much fairer...
A much fairer approach.
And balanced approach.
What about the students themselves, though?
Yeah.
What can they do?
Well, first, they need to be fully informed
okay.
about these standards and procedures.
From day one.
From day one, no more burying this stuff in a handbook nobody reads.
It should be front and center.
Front and center.
Be upfront about the expectations.
Yes.
The potential consequences.
Absolutely.
And students should be proactive.
Yes.
About seeking clarification if anything's unclear.
Yes. They have a right to ask questions.
Ask questions. Advocate for themselves.
Absolutely.
What if a student feels they've been unfairly treated, though?
Right. That's where clear grievance procedures come in.
Okay.
They need to know exactly what steps to take.
Okay.
If they believe their rights have been violated or they disagree with a decision.
So it's not a dead end.
No.
There's a process in place.
There's a process.
For students to challenge decisions.
Exactly. Due process is crucial.
Due process is crucial.
In any system that involves potentially restricting someone's speech,
right.
students have a right to be heard.
To be heard.
Present their side of the story.
Right.
Have their case reviewed by an impartial panel.
It sounds like we're talking about creating a culture shift.
Yeah.
It's not just about enforcing rules.
It's about fostering an environment of yeah. respect, open dialogue, fairness.
That's the ideal.
That's the ideal.
A space where students can express their views.
Right.
Even if those views are dissenting.
Even if they challenge the status quo.
Without fear of retribution.
Without fear of retribution, yes.
Space where intellectual curiosity and rigorous ethical standards can coexist.
And even enhance each other.
That's inspiring.
It is.
But also incredibly challenging to achieve.
It is challenging, but it's a challenge worth striving for.
It is.
Oyama gives us a framework.
Yeah.
But it's just the beginning.
It's just the beginning.
We need to keep asking those tough questions.
Yeah.
Challenging assumptions. Working together to create educational environments
yeah.
that support both freedom of expression
sure.
and professional accountability.
It's an ongoing conversation.
It is. It's a work in progress.
It is. And it's a conversation all of us need to be engaged in.
Educators, students, policymakers.
The public.
The public.
The
yeah.
stakes are high.
Right here.
We're talking about shaping the future of professions.
Professions that impact our lives.
Our communities.
We need to get this right.
Okay, folks. We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
I know this can be complex and sensitive.
Yeah.
But we're not done yet.
Not done yet.
In our final segment, we're going to distill all this
right.
into some practical takeaways.
Okay.
Focusing on implications of Oyama for lawyers, law students,
right.
and anyone interested in the future of free speech on campus.
Looking forward to it.
Stay with us. Okay. So we've been through the Oyama case. And how it could impact other professions.
Yeah.
But let's get practical.
Right.
What are the takeaways here? What does this mean for folks in the legal field?
Right. Especially law students.
Law students.
Getting ready to enter the profession.
Yeah. Dealing with these very issues.
Yeah. I think the big takeaway from Oyama
yeah.
is that universities have more leeway to restrict speech
okay.
in professional training programs
okay.
compared to general academic settings.
Interesting.
But... Big but, those restrictions have to be based on clearly defined external standards.
Okay, okay.
Can't just be a professor's opinion or the university's policy.
It's got to be something solid.
It's got to be concrete.
Like what?
Like state laws, bar association rules,
okay,
ethical codes within the legal profession.
So universities can't just censor students.
No.
Because they don't like their views.
Exactly. There has to be a connection to professional competence.
Right. And Oyama kind of lays out how universities can handle this.
It gives them a roadmap.
You got to demonstrate how the student's speech or behavior
relates to their ability to be a lawyer.
Right. To do the job ethically.
Duly and competently.
And this case also highlights due process.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't just make these decisions out of the blue.
No. Students need fair notice.
Fair notice.
Of the standards.
Right.
A chance to respond.
To respond to concerns.
And a chance to appeal.
If they think they've been treated unfairly.
Due process is so important here.
It is.
It's not just about what the restrictions are.
Right.
But also how they're applied.
Okay. So let's imagine.
Okay.
We're a law school administrator.
Okay.
Faced with a student whose views raise concerns.
Yeah.
What's your advice?
Document everything.
Okay.
Make sure it's all in writing.
Yeah.
A paper trail.
Paper trail classics.
Classic, yeah.
So if it's not written down.
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
Start with those external standards. Highlight the specific laws.
Laws, ethical codes.
Our association rules.
Yeah. That the student might be violating.
Exactly. And document all communication with the student.
So every conversation.
Every warning.
Every chance they're given to address those concerns.
And the reasons behind any decisions.
Okay, so it's like a fortress of documentation.
It is.
If the university's decision is challenged.
They've got the evidence.
They've got the proof.
And this protects the university.
Yeah.
But it also ensures fairness to the student.
So everyone's clear.
Everyone's on the same page.
On what's going on.
Exactly.
All right, so that's for the administrators.
Yeah.
What about our listeners?
Right, the future lawyers. The law students.
The law students. What should they take away from this?
Recognize the complexity of this.
Yeah.
It's easy to get caught up in the free speech absolutism argument.
Right. Or the cancel culture arguments.
But it's more nuanced than that.
There are shades of gray here.
Many shades of gray.
You can't just say anything you want.
Right.
And universities can't just silence anyone they disagree with.
Oyama shows there are reasons.
Yeah. Restrict speech.
In certain situations.
Like professional training programs.
Where you're getting ready to uphold ethical standards.
That impact people's lives.
But we also got to be careful.
We have to be vigilant.
About how those restrictions are applied.
Right. It's not about stifling dissent.
Or targeting people for their beliefs.
It's about finding that balance.
Yeah.
Between freedom of expression,
mm.
professional competence, and accountability.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a question.
Okay.
How do we make sure this precedent is used responsibly?
That's a good question.
How do we prevent it from being used to silence dissent?
Right.
Or enforce a rigid view of what's acceptable?
That's something we all need to think about.
It is.
As our understanding of free speech.
Yeah.
Professional ethics.
And the role of higher ed continues evolving.
It's an ongoing conversation.
It is.
We'll keep revisiting it.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure. On this deep dive into free speech and professional responsibility.
Always a fascinating topic.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.